By the time they reached New York, Duff was an accomplished seaman. He went aloft with the rest of them to reef the sails on orders. He climbed down over the side to hang but inches above the water to apply pitch to the side. He wholly stoned the deck. He performed every task assigned cheerfully and ably. Now, as the ship sailed into New York Harbor, he was standing on the mizzen mainsail yard as the ship was met by a tugboat. With all sails furled and forward propulsion being provided by the steam-powered tugboat, they were brought up snug against one of the piers.
Make a lane secure fore and aft!
The sailors fore and aft looped the hawsers around the on-deck stanchions.
Line secure! Fore and aft, aye, sir!
Rope anchor!
Paymaster from Red Ball Shipping Lines came aboard the Hiawatha within an hour of its dropping anchor. They were also visited by the merchants from the city, tradesmen who met all the arriving ships, as anxious to relieve the sailors of their pay as the sailors were anxious to spend it. Duff welcomed the clothing merchant and bought three pairs of striped trousers. Two pairs were dark blue with black vertical stripes, and one pair was brown with blue vertical stripes. The pants were held closed at the waist with decorative buttons. The three shirts were all white with detachable collars and cuffs.
Will you be shipping over, McAllister? It was fine sailing with you.
I will confess to you, Jig, that was an experience I appreciated more than I thought I would. But I think I'll stay ashore for a while.
McAllister, the captain wants a word with you before you leave.
He said to send you to his cabin.
The captain's cabin? Huh. I've been sailing man and boy for 15 years. I've never been to the captain's cabin.
Captain Powell's cabin took up most of the area under the quarter deck, stretching from side to side and back to the stern where a spread of windows let in the light.
Come in, Mr. McAllister.
Captain Powell smiled when he saw what Duff was wearing.
Now, I must say, that is more befitting a gentleman than the clothes you've been wearing for the last 3 weeks. Buy it from the clothing merchant, did you?
Aye, sir. I felt I no longer had the right to Peter's clothes.
Mr. McAllister, I kept a close eye on you during the voyage. You had an inauspicious beginning sneaking on board as you did. I'm glad to see that you aren't refuting me. Did stow away, did you not?
Aye.
Yes, well, as I say, you had a most inauspicious beginning, but a most commendable voyage. You did not shirk your duties. You performed them with the skill that one would expect from a much more experienced sailor, to say nothing of your saving Jig's life. I watched the men around you as well, and while it is often difficult for a new sailor to break into a crew, tight-knit as they tend to be, the men liked and respected you. I'm told when you came aboard, you introduced yourself to Jigs as Captain McAllister. Are you a captain, Mr. McAllister?
Aye, I am a captain. That is, I was a captain in the 42nd Foot, 3rd Battalion of the Royal Highland Regiment of Scots. It is a regiment we call the Black Watch.
Aye, I knew you were officer material. I think with my recommendation you should ship out again for Red Ball as a ship's officer. Serve as a warrant or lieutenant for a few cruises. Then you could one day command your own ship. What do you think about that?
I think it's very flattering, and I believe you would be most kind to make such a recommendation, Captain. But I do not think the sea is for me. I think I'll stay on dry land for a while.
I shall not try to change your mind. But just know that if you ever have a desire to go to sea again, look me up. I'll be happy to sponsor you.
I appreciate that, Captain. More than I can say.
After saying his goodbyes to his fellow sailors, Duff left the Hiawatha and got a hotel room in the city. Duff awakened the next morning to the sounds of the city. Getting out of bed, Duff moved to the window to have his first real look at New York. With 5- and 6-story buildings on either side of the street, he felt as if he were looking down a canyon. The street was filled with pedestrians and vehicles, hundreds of people strolling to and fro, and dozens of large freight wagons, omnibuses, elegant carriages, buckboards, and surreys. In addition to surface traffic, there was also an elevated railroad and a spiderweb maze of telephone, telegraph, and electric lines. His room had electric lights, and the notice on the dresser proudly proclaimed that telephone service was available in the lobby. Duff had heard of a telephone, but he had never seen one and wasn't exactly sure how one would work. After getting dressed, he walked down to the lobby to see how one went about using the telephone. He spoke with one of the clerks.
What number do you wish to call?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what you mean by number. I wish to call a person.
Sir, if that person has a telephone, the telephone will have a number. You must know the number in order to put your call through.
Oh, I'm afraid I don't know the number.
If you know the person's name, we can look up the number.
Look up the number? How does one do that?
There's a book called a telephone book. Every person and every business that has a telephone has their name listed in that book, along with the number you need in order to call them. Like this.
The clerk took a phone book from beneath his desk.
Now, what is the name of the person you wish to call?
His name is Andrew McAllister.
Andrew McAllister? Do you mean the famous actor?
Yes, he is an actor.
Perhaps you had best find someone else to call. Andrew McAllister is a very famous man. I seriously doubt that he would be up to taking a phone call from a stranger.
But we're nae strangers. We're kinsmen.
Kinsmen, you say? And what would your name be?
McAllister.
The self-same as the actor?
Aye, kinsmen we are.
Oh, then in that case, I will look the number up for you. The number you want to call is 8178.
The clerk handed the receiver to Duff, and Duff looked at it as if unsure what to do with it.
Hold it to your ear. When the operator comes on, tell her 8178.
Number, please.
Duff took the receiver from his ear and held it up to his mouth.
Not here. Here.
The clerk pointed to the little transmitter. Duff nodded and leaned into the transmitter.
8178!
Sir, it is not necessary for you to speak so loudly.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's all right, sir. Many do.
Hello?
Cousin Andrew, this is Duff McAllister.
Duff, you're in New York. How wonderful. Where are you?
I'm at the Abbey Hotel.
Wait in the lobby. I'll send a carriage for you.
Half an hour later, Duff was standing in Andrew's apartment. The apartment was large and expensively decorated. But the most appealing feature of the apartment was the magnificent view of the city. Because of the height of Andrew's apartment building, much of the city could be seen all the way down to the docks, where Duff could see both steamships and sailing ships. Andrew walked over to the wall and removed the telephone from the hook.
8325, please. Rosanna, he is here. Yes, we will have lunch together. I hope you don't mind that I invited Rosanna to have lunch with us.
No, not at all. I will be delighted to see her again.
How long can you stay in America?
I'm never going back.
But your fiancé?
Skye is dead, Andrew. She was murdered.
Oh, Duff. I am so sorry. Do they know who did it?
Yes, and the ones who did it have already been executed.
Well, I am glad they have paid for their crime. And I am glad that you have come to America. I think making a fresh start will be good for you.
I believe so as well.
We'll have to find a place for you to stay. And will you be looking for a job?
I have some money, but I didn't know how long it will last.
Well, I know just the job for you.
With an introduction provided by Andrew, Duff began working backstage at a major theater. He was a skilled carpenter, and he had the ability to analyze complex problems and solve them quickly. Within a month, He became a stage manager, an important and most prestigious job. And now that he was securely employed in America, he decided it was time to write his friend Ian McGregor to tell him that all was well.
Dear Ian, my heart is still heavy with grief from the death of my beloved Skye, the more so because I was unable to be there for her funeral. But while I was not there in person, I was there in spirit, and I know that even as she sleeps in the arms of our Lord, she is aware of the undying love I have for her. I know too that at the time of her funeral she was surrounded by those who loved her most, and I take comfort from that. On the night I left Scotland, I secured passage on a ship bound for New York. I did so by way of working as a crew member during the voyage. It was very hard work, but the very difficulty of the work helped me to deal with the pain of losing the one who was the center of my life. I take respite in the fact that our dear Skye returned my love with equal vigor, though I shall never understand how one as unworthy as I could have won the love of such a wonderful woman. I'm now living in New York, and have gone to work in the theater, the position secured for me by my cousin Andrew. We are in pre-production, as they say, for the play The Highlander. I am told that it was inspired by the visit of my cousins Andrew and Rosanna to Scotland. Of course, Andrew and Rosanna are the principal players of the production. I hold the most gratifying position as stage manager. The play will take place in the Rex, an elegant and ample theatre which is on West 48th Street at Broadway. You may find this interesting, Ian. The Rex Theatre is lit entirely by electricity, the installation personally supervised by the inventor Thomas Edison. Please write to me and tell me how you're doing. With shared sorrow for the loss of our dear Skye, I remain your friend, Duff McAllister.
Scotland, Dunoon in Argyllshire. Postmaster Desmond Henry walked into the office of the Lord High Sheriff Angus Summerald, clutching an envelope to his breast. Deputy Rab Malcolm looked up at him.
Postmaster Henry, may I help you?
He would like to speak with the sheriff, please.
What do you want to see the sheriff about?
That would be between me and the sheriff.
Deputy Malcolm stood and walked into the back office. He returned after a moment with the sheriff.
What is this about, Henry?
Is there still a reward being offered for anyone who can tell you where to find Duff McAllister?
A £20 reward, yes. Do you know where he is?
Let me see the £20.
Sheriff Summerald nodded at Deputy Malcolm, and Malcolm walked over to a file, opened a drawer, and took out 4 5-pound notes and handed them to the sheriff. Postmaster Henry reached out for him, but the sheriff pulled his hand back.
Where is he?
Well, that's just that, Sheriff. I will tell you where he is, but you will nae be able to do anything about it. 'Tis out of your jurisdiction, he is.
Where is he?
He's in New York.
New York? You mean he's in America?
Aye.
How do you know he's in New York?
He wrote this letter to Ian McGregor.
The postmaster showed the envelope to the sheriff.
It has his return address on it. 200 West 48th Street, New York, New York.
How do we know he's still there?
Because he has a job there. It is clear that he plans to stay for a while.
How do you know that?
I steamed open the envelope and read the letter. I made a copy of the letter before I returned it to the envelope.
Let me see your copy.
That will cost you another £20.
I could arrest you for opening someone else's mail.
You could. But you may not find another postmaster who is as willing to cooperate with you as I have always been.
Yes, for profit.
One has to make a living, Sheriff. The Postal Service pays so little.
Malcolm, get him another £20.
Deputy Malcolm got another £20 and gave it to the postmaster, who in return gave the sheriff a folded piece of paper.
I printed it clearly, so you should have no trouble reading it.
Summerall took the piece of paper, opened it, and began reading eagerly.
If you will excuse me, I have business to attend to. I must deliver this letter to Mr. McGregor.
Anything interesting, Sheriff?
How would you like to go to America?
I've always wanted to visit America.
I'll be sending you, along with Roderick and Alexander. And they'll be putting you in charge, knowing how hot-headed and irresponsible my two boys are.
You'll be telling them I'm in charge, will you not, Sheriff? For without hearing from you, I think they may not listen.
I will tell them, and they will listen.
Sheriff, you have no jurisdiction in America. When we find McAllister, how do you want me to deal with him?
Deal with him? There'll be no dealing with him. I'll be for wanting you to kill him.
I was hoping, I was, that you would say that. Gillis and Nevin were good friends of mine. I'll take pleasure in avenging them.
Tis for them you'll be seeking vengeance, and tis for their brother that Roderick and Alexander will be doing the same. Don't let me down, Malcolm. I want Duff Tavish McAllister killed, and when he dies, there'll be no more McAllisters in Scotland. The 200 and more years our clans have been at war will come to an end.
Aboard the Cunard steamship Etruria. The young lady's name was Miriam Phelps, and she was from one of New York's wealthiest and most fashionable families. This was not her first transatlantic voyage, though it was the first one she had made alone, and she was now coming back from a grand tour of Europe. Roderick and Alexandra Summerald met her in the first-class dining room, and she had flirted outrageously with both of them. Malcolm had watched with interest how she was playing the brothers against each other. He knew that it was all a game to her, a means of diversion for a very wealthy young woman at whose feet the whole world lay. They'd been at sea for 5 days, when early in the morning, as Malcolm was asleep in his stateroom, he felt someone's hand on his shoulder.
What? Malcolm!
Malcolm saw Alexander sitting on the side of his bed, his eyes gleaming wildly and a look of panic on his face.
Wake up, Malcolm! Wake up! I'm awake! What is it? What's going on?
We need some help.
Who needs some help?
I do. So does Roddy.
What do you mean you need help? You need help with what?
Maybe you'd better come to our stateroom.
What time is it?
It's about 3 o'clock.
In the morning?
Aye.
What you doing waking me at this hour?
Please, Malcolm, get dressed and come with me. We need your help.
Aye, you keep saying that.
Malcolm dressed quickly, and he and Alexander went to Alexander and Roderick's stateroom.
What is this all about? What's going on? And why is it so dark in here?
Roddy, turn on the light.
The Etruria was equipped with electric lamps, so it required but the flick of a switch for the dark to be pushed away.
She's over there.
She? Who is... What the hell?
Lying on one of the two beds, her arms and legs askew, her dress torn asunder to expose her naked body, her face blue, and her eyes bulging, with her final expression of terror still discernible, was Miriam Phelps.
My God! You killed her!
We had to, don't you see?
No, I don't see. What do you mean you had to?
She was not but a tease. First she said she wanted Roddy, then she said she wanted me, but it was a tease all along. We brought her here. We gave her a chance to be with one of us.
We even said we didn't care which one. She could be with Alexander and I would watch, or she could be with me and Alexander would watch.
But she didn't want to be with either one of us, so...
You raped her.
Aye.
Which one of you?
Both of us.
But I think she actually wanted it.
What makes you think that?
Because she didn't scream. Not with either one of us.
But afterward, she said she was going to report us.
And we couldn't have let that happen.
So we,
Roderick pointed to the girl's twisted and bruised body.
So what do you want me to do?
Tell us what to do.
We've got to get rid of the body.
How?
How? We're on a ship in the middle of the bloody ocean. We'll throw her and her close overboard.
See, Roddy, I told you that Malcolm would know what to do.
Ha! Did you read this in the newspaper? That thing, she fell overboard.
Malcolm sat with Alexander and Roderick in a small cafe in New York City.
We got away with it.
This time... You were lucky. You might not be so lucky next time. So my advice to you is, stay out of trouble.
Our father may have appointed you in charge of us while we're looking for McAllister, but he didn't put you in charge of our personal lives.
Nor do I want to be in charge of your personal lives, but I am in charge of finding Duff McAllister and dealing with him. And until that is accomplished, anything that might get in the way of our finding him comes under my purview.
All right. We'll go along with what you say until then. But after we take care of McAllister, you're not in charge of us anymore.
The first thing we need to do is find the Rex Theatre.
Ooh, when we find the theatre, let us get good seats. I like watching plays. Alexander, do you remember the play we went to in Edinburgh?
Aye, that was a good play.
We'll find the theatre, but we'll now put ourselves into a position where he might see us.
What? Do you mean we'll have to sit in the very back row?
We won't sit in any row.
What do you mean? How are we going to see the play if we don't sit in any row?
We're not going to see the play. We'll wait outside until the play is over and the audience has left. It will be dark in the auditorium then, so we'll be able to sneak in without being seen.
Two nights later, Malcolm, Roderick, and Alexander waited across the street from the theater, and they watched as the patrons left. The theatergoers were talking about the play they had just seen.
When are we going in?
When we're sure that everyone has left.
They're all gone now. You can tell that.
Don't get so anxious. We need a plan.
We have a plan. He killed our brother, and we are going to kill him. That is our plan.
The lights outside the theater went off.
Now let's go.
Wait, it won't take a minute to come up with a plan as to how we're going to do this.
I don't want to wait another minute. I want to kill him now.
The three men walked under the marquee and all the way up to the double doors that opened into the lobby.
Yeah, the doors are locked.
I'll take care of that.
Alexander took out a pocket knife, opened it, then slipped it in between the doors.
Here we are.
What if he's already gone?
He hasn't gone. There are lights on back there, see? And he's the stage manager, which means he would be the last to leave.
The three men moved quietly through the darkened theater until they reached the stage. Then, climbing onto the stage, they stepped through the curtains and crossed the stage before moving into the backstage area. That was when they saw Duff working on something with a plane. Duff leaned over to see if he had leveled the edge of the flat.
Duff McAllister, we have come for you.
Startled at hearing Alexander's voice here in America, Duff turned toward the sound, but saw nothing in the darkness. He was at a disadvantage, because while Alexander was cloaked by darkness, he was well lighted.
Alexander Summerald, have you come alone?
Duff moved away from the flat to the property's locker. Alongside the property's locker was the light control panel.
I am with him.
And so am I, Deputy Malcolm.
Deputy Malcolm, is it? Well, you've wasted a trip, Deputy Malcolm, for you have no jurisdiction here. You can't arrest me.
It's not for to arrest you. We have come, Duff McAllister, but to kill you.
Reaching his hand up to the light control panel, Duff turned off the backstage light. As soon as the theater went dark, he grabbed the Claymore sword, a sword Andrew and Rosanna had handled on stage. And though it was used as a prop, it was a real Claymore sword, 55 inches in overall length with a 13-inch grip and 42-inch blade.
What the hell? Where did he go? Where is he?
Shoot him! Shoot him!
Shoot where?
Duff picked up a vase and tossed it through the darkness to the opposite side of the room.
Over there! He's trying to get away! Shoot him! Shoot him!
The flashes of light enabled Duff to come up behind him.
Here I am, boys!
The three men turned toward him. Duff decapitated the two Summerald brothers. Malcolm, who had managed to avoid the blade, pulled the trigger of his pistol, but the hammer fell on an empty chamber. He ran. Duff went and turned the lights back on. The two decapitated Summerald brothers lay on the floor, their heads a few feet away. There was a great deal of blood surrounding the two bodies. Duff knew that he was going to have his work cut out for him tonight. The first thing he was going to have to do was get rid of the bodies. He did that by putting both bodies and their heads in a push cart that had been part of the properties of a previous play, dropping their guns in there as well. He pushed the cart down the alley for at least a full mile away from the theater before dumping the bodies behind a trash container. Returning to the theater, he worked for the rest of the night cleaning the blood stains from the floor in the cart. It was nearly dawn by the time he went home to change clothes and wash up. When he returned to the theater the next day, there was no sign of the grisly event that had happened the night before. The show went on as usual, with the audience just as appreciative, and the players and theater company were blissfully ignorant of the fact that two men had been killed in this very place. Duff spent the next 2 days anticipating the return of Deputy Malcolm. He realized that the fact that Malcolm did not return right away didn't mean he wasn't going to come back. He couldn't stay here any longer, for to do so would endanger not only Andrew and Rosanna, but the entire theater company. Duff had no choice now. He was going to have to leave. He didn't want to run. He liked this job. And if the danger was only to him, he would not have run. But he had already seen what had happened to Skye. She was an innocent victim who was killed only because she was too close to him. He had no wish to see something like that happen again. That's when he told Percy Fowler, first assistant to the stage manager, to ask Andrew and Rosanna to meet him in the set storeroom.
You wanted to see us, Cousin Duff?
Aye.
Well, couldn't we have picked a more comfortable place to meet? The green room, perhaps? Or my dressing room?
I think here is better. What I have to say isn't for anyone's ears but the two of you, and I would not burden you with it if I did not have to.
Burden us? Burden us with what?
With the real truth of why I came to America.
I thought you said it was because Skye had been killed.
Aye, that is true. She was killed by the sheriff and two of his deputies, Gillis and Nevin.
But I don't understand. Why would the sheriff and his deputies want to kill such a lovely young girl?
It was not she they intended to kill, but me. Earlier in the same evening, I happened upon two of the sheriff's sons, Roderick and Donald, as they were attacking Skye with the intention of having their way with her. I interrupted their scheme, and in the fight that followed, killed Donald. After I took Skye back to her father, I vowed to turn myself into the sheriff and plead self-defense. Skye, wonderful girl that she was, and truly in love with me, accompanied me so that the sheriff might hear the truth of the events. She did this because she knew that Roderick would have told his father a much different story. While on the road to the sheriff's office, we were set upon by Sheriff Summerald and deputies Malcolm, Gillis, and Nevin. Without so much as a by your leave, they began shooting at us, and the bullet struck and killed Skye. In a rage, I killed both of the deputies, but the sheriff and Deputy Malcolm ran from me. I then stowed aboard a ship and made my way here.
And here you shall stay, for if ever there was a killing that was justified, this was it.
Aye, and I would have been happy to stay here for a long time. The work is good, and the company is most agreeable. But 2 nights ago, the sheriff's other two sons and another deputy found me here.
But how? How did they find you?
I have no idea.
Where are they now? Well, never mind that. They have no authority here. And we can secure a good lawyer for you who will help you defend yourself.
The situation has grown more complicated.
In what way?
Perhaps you read the article in the paper this morning. The two bodies found in the alley some distance from here.
Yes, you're talking about the two men that were killed in Chinatown.
It was not Chinatown where they were killed, but right here.
Here where?
Here, in the theater. The two men are Rurik and Alexander Summerald. They and Deputy Malcolm confronted me here in the theater, on the night I stayed to work on the flats. They came not to arrest me, but to kill me. And they began shooting. I managed to turn out the lights, and with the advantage I had in the darkness by knowing the theater, I was able to turn the tide on them. I killed the Summerald brothers, but Malcolm got away. Then, in order that I not get anyone in the theater in trouble, I moved their bodies. But as I think about it, I know that isn't enough. Somehow Deputy Malcolm traced me here, and he can come again, and that would put the two of you in danger.
Don't worry about that. We'll face the danger together. It's not as if we have never faced danger before.
No, I must leave. I have brought enough hurt to the people that I love as it is. I will bring no more.
Where will you go?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. I will just go.
He can go to Falcon!
Yes! I don't know why I didn't think of that myself. Duff, you must go find our brother, Falcon. If there is anyone in the world who can help you now, it would be Falcon.
I thank you kindly, but I've nae wish to bring my troubles to anyone else.
Don't be silly. Everyone brings their troubles to Falcon. He thrives on it.
Trust me, Duff. He will welcome you with open arms, and I will write a letter of introduction for you.
Where would I find him?
In Colorado. Oh, have you money?
I have some money that I brought with me, and I'm owed 2 weeks' salary from the production company. But I hesitate to wait for it.
You need not wait. I know how much is due you. I'll pay you now. Come to my dressing room. I'll give you the money and the letter of introduction.
And?
And?
Don't you remember the Black Watch thing?
Oh, yes. We were going to wait and present this to you at the close of the production of The Highlander, sort of a thank you reward for a job well done as stage manager. But if you are leaving now, we may as well give it to you. Come.
Duff followed Andrew and Rosanna to Andrew's dressing room. There, Andrew gave Duff the $100 he had due in wages. Then he removed the contents of a box. It was the uniform jacket and kilt to the Black Watch, complete with a skein do, the ceremonial knife.
We thought you might like to keep this with you.
Duff nodded, then put his hand on Andrew's shoulder.
'Tis family ye are, and family ye will always be. I thank the both of ye for all that ye've done.
Unbeknownst to the McAllisters, Percy Fowler had been hiding behind the flats in the storeroom. He had no idea why Duff McAllister had wanted to speak to Andrew and Rosanna, but if by listening to their conversation he could realize some advantage for himself, he would do so. So as soon as he brought the McAllisters into the storeroom, he'd moved out of sight quickly, and there he'd heard every word they said. Percy had been working in this theater through 5 previous productions, and he'd been told that with the next production, he'd be elevated to the position of stage manager. But that didn't happen when Duff McAllister arrived. Both Andrew and Rosanna had insisted that their cousin be given the job, and because they were highly regarded by the producer of the play, their request was honored. Percy had been angered by being cut out of a job that was rightly his. There was nothing he could do about it but accept it, for he knew of no other occupation that paid as well. Now he was privy to some very secret information. Information that he might find some way to turn to his advantage. The next day, Deputy Malcolm waited in the green room of the Rex Theater. He had flashed his badge and used its pull to get a face-to-face meeting with the stage manager. His plan had become a simple one. Wait for Duff McAllister to enter the room, then blast him to hell. Malcolm was surprised when a moment later, a rather short and nearly bald man came into the room.
Reed said you needed to see me.
Actually, I wanted to see Mr. McAllister.
He's no longer here.
Do you have any idea where I might find him?
You're not American, are you? You sound just like Mr. McAllister. What are you, Scottish?
Yes, I am, actually.
Why do you want to find him?
Why, the man is a good friend from Scotland. I thought perhaps that two people from the same county in Scotland, here in New York at the same time, should have a bit of a meeting.
Is he your friend? Or have you come to arrest him for the murder?
You know about that, do you?
I know that he killed 2 men here.
Aye, McAllister is wanted for murder. And so tell me, my lad, how is it that you be known about that?
I know.
The reason I'm looking for him is I've been sent by himself, the sheriff, to deal with the matter.
Were you one of the three who came for him last week?
You know of last week.
I know that before he left Scotland, Duff McAllister killed one of the sheriff's sons and two of his deputies. And I know that last week, when you and the sheriff's other two sons came for him, McAllister killed them both.
Aye, that is true. I was here with the sheriff's last two sons.
I imagine the sheriff back in Scotland must want him something fierce.
Aye, that he does. Seeing as how McAllister has killed all three of the sheriff's sons.
How badly does the sheriff want him?
What do you mean?
I know where McAllister is, and I could make that information available to an interested party if the price is right.
I see. And how is it that you know where he is?
I overheard him talking to his cousins. They discussed where he should go. Would that information be worth anything to you?
Would you not be willing to share it for the satisfaction of knowing it's the right thing to do?
Yes, I will have the satisfaction of knowing that it is the right thing to do. But I would also appreciate the reward. There is a reward, is there not?
Have you now been rewarded enough by being promoted? 'Tis true, is it not, that you would not have the job of stage manager if McAllister had not run off?
That is true. But with my new position comes new obligations, financial obligations. You are in need of information. I am in need of some money. Perhaps we can work something out between us.
You want money?
Yes.
I could see my way to giving you £5.
$5? Do you mean to tell me that all the sheriff is willing to give to find the killer of his three sons and two deputies is $5?
I said £5, not $5. If you took the £5 to the bank and made a currency exchange, you would get $25.
I'll be needing more than $25.
£10. That would be $50.
I want $100.
I'll not give you $100. The offer is $50. Take it or leave it.
You'll not find McAllister without my help.
If you know where he's gone, there'll be others who know as well. Perhaps someone who knows the value of money and will give me the information for £5.
All right, all right. You go to the bank, convert your money into dollars, then come back and see me. When you do, I'll tell you where Duff McAllister has gone.
Wait here. I will be back shortly.
Malcolm left and went to the bank to change over some of his money. He returned to the theater a while later and found Percy Fowler waiting for him outside.
Do you have the money?
I do. Shall we go inside?
No, I think it's best we do our business out here. I don't want anyone inside to see me talking to you. Give me the money.
Malcolm counted out $50 in $5 bills. Fowler took the bills, folded them over, then stuck them in his pocket.
He went to Colorado.
Colorado? Isn't that a state? Can't you be more specific than that?
He has a cousin there named Falcon McAllister. I am given to understand that Falcon McAllister is a name that nearly all in Colorado will recognize. I think if you go to Colorado, then start inquiring about Falcon McAllister, you will find your man soon enough.
All right, I will do that. But if I go to Colorado and find that I'm on a wild goose chase, I'll be coming back to settle with you. And you, I know where to find.
After leaving the theater, Duff went to a department store to purchase new clothes, as well as a gun, holster, and ammunition. Next, he went to the train station to make arrangements to make his way out to Colorado on a Union Pacific train called the Western Flyer. He found the name of the train amusing. For while the eastern trains had averaged a swift 40 miles per hour on the open track, the western Flyer proceeded along at the leisurely pace of from 16 to 20 miles per hour. There was no dining car on the train, as there had been on the trains east of Omaha. Instead, it made regularly scheduled stops for meals, the first stop being North Bend, Nebraska. When the train stopped, Duff made his way over to the Occidental Saloon, which stood right next to the train depot. He ordered a plate of chicken and dumplings and found the meal to be quite delicious.
Whore! Keep your finger out of my drink! Ain't no telling where that whore finger of yours has been.
Please, sir, I didn't put my finger in your drink!
Don't you be lying to me, whore! I seen you stick your finger down in that whiskey when you was bringing it over to me. You stuck your finger down into it, then you stuck your finger in your mouth, trying to suck the whiskey off of it.
The woman was provocatively dressed, much more so than she would have been if she were only a serving girl. She might have been quite attractive at one time, but the dissipation of her profession had drained her of any natural beauty. In addition, her features were marred by a disfiguring scar that caused one eyelid to droop. That same scar continued below her eye and hooked in toward her nose. Duff was certain that the disfiguring scar was not the result of an accident.
I beg your pardon, friend.
The hell do you want?
Duff picked up the glass of whiskey.
'Tis wondering I am, if this be the drink that offends ye.
Offends ye? Yeah. What are you, some sort of preacher? That's Bible talk, ain't it? Ye and thou, that kind of talk?
Aye, but 'tis also the language of my native country. I'm Scottish.
Yeah, well, tell me, Mr. Scottish man, what the hell are you doing interfering with something that ain't none of your concern?
I thought perhaps I could buy you a new drink, since you think this one's been tainted.
Tainted? Yeah, that's what it's been, all right.
Duff, still holding the drink in his right hand, took out a dollar with his left and handed it to the serving girl.
Lassie, would you be so kind as to bring another drink for the gentleman?
The girl took the dollar, went over to the bar to buy another drink, then brought it and the change back.
I want no change. 'Twould please me for you to keep it for your trouble. Give this gent his drink.
The young woman smiled, and because the smile was genuine, it softened the features of her face. She handed the man his drink.
There you are, sir. Enjoy your drink.
What are you doing, the one in your hand?
Oh, I'm gonna give this one to you as well.
Duff tossed the whiskey into the bearded man's face.
Ah, you son of a bitch!
The bearded man pulled his pistol from his holster and pointed it at Duff. Duff threw a lightning-fast hard right into his face. That done, Duff looked over at the young woman, whose face, like the face of everyone else in the saloon, wore an expression of pure shock.
Will you be all right, lass?
Yes, I will be fine. I can't believe a stranger would come to my rescue as you did. Thank you very much.
Ach, dinna worry yourself, lassie. Ah, that's my train. Best I go now. Barkeep, please tell your cook for me that the meal was quite delicious.
Duff had just settled in his seat on the train when he saw the woman from the Occidental Saloon come aboard. She looked around the car for a moment, then seeing Duff, she came back to his seat. He started to stand, but she held out her hand.
Don't be troubling yourself, mister. I won't be bothering you. I just wanted to thank you again.
She held up her ticket.
I'm going on to Central City. There's nothing here for me now. And I've got a friend there.
You gave up your job?
Mister, in my line of work, jobs are easy to come by. Well, I'll go find a seat and be of no further bother.
Nonsense. You're no bother. Please, sit here.
The woman sat down, not on the seat beside him, but on the seat across, facing him.
My name is Belle. Oh, no, it isn't. That's just the name I use when I'm working. My real name is Martha. Martha Jane Radley. I don't know why I'm telling you my real name. I never tell anyone. I wouldn't want it to get back to my pa that I'm a soiled dove.
Soiled dove? I don't know the term.
Soiled dove is what we, that is, girls who are on the line, call ourselves.
On the line?
I'm going to have to come right out and say it, aren't I? I don't just serve drinks. I'm also a prostitute.
I see.
I came west from a small town in southeast Missouri. I thought I could make it on my own, but it's very hard for a woman alone to find honest employment. Out of desperation, I drifted into prostitution. You can't be just a little bit of a prostitute. You either are or you aren't. And I am. I was told that it would be easy work and I would make a lot of money.
Ah, but it isn't what you thought, is it?
You got that right, mister. The saloon gets most of the money, and as for easy work, there is nothing easy about dealing with drunken cowboys when they get frustrated because they can't, perform.
Aye, I saw an example of that back in the Occidental Saloon.
Well, that was Clyde Shaw. He ain't the one who cut me, but he does like to slap the girls around a bit. You haven't told me your name.
Oh, please forgive me, lass. I apologize for my lack of manners. The name is McAllister. Duff McAllister.
Mr. McAllister, believe me, you have nothing to apologize for.
Oh, if that were but true.
McAllister? Are you kin to Falcon McAllister?
Aye, he would be my cousin. Tis surprised I am to hear you say his name. How is it that you know him?
I know who he is, but I don't know him. I've never met him.
Then how can it be that you know who he is if you've never met him?
Don't you know? Falcon McAllister is well known throughout the West. Why, there have been books written about him, as well as his famous father.
He has a brother and sister who are famous as well. They're actors upon the stage in New York.
Really? I didn't know that. Oh, how I would love to visit New York someday and go to a play and see all the sights. Have you been to New York, Mr. McAllister?
Aye.
If I ever get to visit New York, I will never leave.
Duff and Martha continued their visit for the 4 hours it took to travel from North Bend to Central City.
I had a true love once, but his father was a very wealthy man and he wanted his son to marry the daughter of a wealthy man. My pa was a preacher man. He barely made a living from it. Leo, that was my beau's name, came to see me the night before he was to get married. He wanted me to still be there for him after he got married. He said he would set me up with a house and would come to see me when he could. I got very angry with him for asking me to do something like that. I wanted to know what kind of woman he thought I was. The truth is, I wanted to do it, but I was afraid to. Something like that would have killed my pa. So I left home rather than stay there and take a chance that I might take Leo up on his offer. I was too good to be a kept woman. But now look at me. I'm a whore.
We cannot always direct the paths our lives will take. We can only but go where life leads us.
If you mean we have no control over our own lives, you got that right. Take you, for example. You said you were from Scotland, but here you are in America. Did you plan to come here?
I had no such plans.
Duff told Martha about Sky and that she had died on the day before they were to wed. He didn't tell her how she died, nor did he tell her of his own actions after she died. But he did tell Martha how deep his love was for Sky and how much he grieved for her. Duff's tale left Martha in tears, and she reached across the space that separated them and put her hand on his shoulder.
Mr. McAllister, you are a good and decent man. You are as good and decent a man as I have ever met. I hope that you can find peace in your heart, and I hope that someday you can find a woman who is worthy of your love.
After days of passing through towns that were so small they scarcely deserved to be called a town, Duff's arrival in Denver proved to be a most pleasant surprise. Every other town since St. Louis was so small that the engine in the last car of the train, while at rest in the depot, pretty much stretched nearly from one end of the town to the other. For the most part, they'd been windy, desolate-looking places with low, featureless buildings. But Denver was actually a city with buildings of brick and stone or wood that was painted and glistening in the sun. The depot was a large three-story building, huge and impressive. And other trains either sat in the station or arrived and departed on tracks that fanned out in all directions like the spokes on a wagon wheel. From Denver, Duff would board his final train, the one that would take him to the town of McAllister. But he learned, when checking the schedule, that the train to McAllister would not leave until 9 o'clock the following morning. Duff was going to have to find a hotel room for the night, but the thought of spending the night in Denver was not exactly daunting. In fact, he was looking forward to it. North Bend, Nebraska.
A beer, barkeep, if you didn't mind.
Rab Malcolm had come into the Occidental Saloon while the train was stopped long enough to allow the passengers to take their meal. There was a big bearded man standing at the far end of the bar, and when he heard Malcolm give his order, he quickly looked around.
Hey, you! Where are you from?
Malcolm turned to face the man who called out to him.
I am from Dunoon, though it be none of your concern.
Would that be Scotland?
I am from Scotland.
What the hell? Are we being overtook with people from Scotland? You're the second one to come through here in the last week.
The other Scot? Would he be a big man with broad shoulders, light-colored hair, blue eyes?
Yeah, that's what the bastard looked like, all right.
I take it you didn't make friends with him?
Friends? If I ever see that son of a bitch again, I'll shoot him on sight.
Barkeep, would you be for serving my new friend another drink?
Malcolm slapped a coin on the bar. The bartender picked it up, then poured another whiskey for the big bearded man.
Why did you do that? And why'd you call me your friend? I don't even know you.
The name is Reb Malcolm. And in Scotland we have a saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. The man you have developed such a dislike for is Duff McAllister. Duff McAllister is my enemy. Did you mean it when you said you would shoot him on sight?
Damn right I meant it. That is, unless you're the law.
As it so happens, I am the law. And as it also so happens, Duff McAllister is wanted by the law. So you'd not be incurring trouble on my behalf if you were to shoot him.
Well, that's good to know.
What's your name, friend?
Name is Shaw. Clyde Shaw.
Be ye gainfully employed, Mr. Shaw?
You say what?
Do you have a job?
No, not at the moment. I was working down at the livery, but I got into a fight with the boss's brother-in-law, so I got fired.
Do you seek employment?
Yeah, I reckon so. Reckon it depends on what it is, if it'll pay anything.
Suppose I hire you as my deputy, Mr. Shaw. You can help me hunt down McAllister.
Hunt him down? I don't know. You being from Scotland and all, maybe you don't know how big this country is. Hell, he could be anywhere between here and California.
I know exactly where he's going.
You do? Where?
He's going to Colorado, where he intends to look up a kinsman of his named Falcon McAllister.
Falcon McAllister?
Yeah. Do you know him?
Well, I've heard of him. Hell, near about everyone in the West has heard of him.
What have you heard of him?
Well, he's supposed to be about the best pistol there ever was. Better than Wild Bill Hickok, they say.
Maybe when he was younger. I'm told that he's nearly 50 years old now. How fast can an old man be?
I don't know. Like I say, I never met him. Only his thing is, I've heard of him.
It doesn't matter anyway. Duff McAllister is the one who's wanted by the law. He's the one we're going after, and I don't think you'll have to worry about him. I know the man, and I know he has no skill with the pistol.
You'd hire me, you say?
Hey, as my deputy.
What would that pay?
I'll give you $25 now, and $75 when the job's done.
I ain't all that good with ciphering. How much is that?
That is $100, and I will buy all the meals along the way.
Drinks too?
When it is appropriate.
Oh, mister, you just hired yourself a deputy.
The arrival of trains in McAllister was still enough of an event to draw several citizens out, for no other reason than to see the trains arrive and depart. Falcon McAllister reread the telegram as he stood on the depot platform.
Our Scottish cousin, Duff McAllister, will arrive in McAllister on the morning train on Saturday, August 7th. Stop. Please meet him and extend all help he may need. Stop. Letter to follow. Stop. Andrew.
Only three people stepped down from the train, a man, a woman, and a child, suggesting to Falcon that it was a husband and wife. But then the woman smiled and took one of the bags from the man, and she and her child walked away, leaving the man standing there, looking at the sights before him. Falcon decided this was the man he was here to meet. Duff saw the big man coming toward him. There was a slight resemblance to Andrew, though the man coming toward him was much taller and more muscular. In fact, the man in size and body proportion was almost a mirror image of Duff himself.
You would be
Duff McAllister?
Aye, Falcon. I am Duff McAllister.
Falcon and Duff extended their hands at the same time. The grip was firm and friendly.
Help! Someone help me! That man took my reticule!
The shout came from an old woman who was about to board the train. Looking towards her, Duff and Falcon could see a man clutching the woman's purse as he ran toward his horse.
Excuse me, sir.
Duff grabbed a polished cane from a man beside him.
Well, good Lord!
Duff threw the cane at the running thief, aiming at his legs. Duff ran to him and, grabbing him by the scruff of his neck, jerked him to his feet. Falcon was right behind Duff, and he picked up the purse, then returned it to the woman who had lost it.
Oh, thank you, sir.
I'm not the one you should be thanking. There's your hero.
Falcon pointed to Duff. With his right hand, Duff was holding his thumb and forefinger tight against the back of the would-be thief's neck. In his left hand, he was holding the cane he had borrowed.
Your cane, sir. I appreciate the loan.
The man took the cane with a smile on his face.
I assume there's a constabulary in this town.
We have a sheriff. Name is Cody. Come on, we'll pay him a visit.
Oh, let go of my neck! You're hurting me!
You can let go if you want to. He won't go away.
How do you know?
Because if he tries to run away, I'll shoot him.
Sheriff Amos Cody was sitting at his desk looking through a pile of wanted posters when Falcon, Duff, and Duff's prisoner came in.
Stand there, and don't you be moving without the sheriff's permission.
Good morning, Mr. McAllister. What do we have here?
And how would you be knowing my name?
You aren't the only McAllister in the room, Duff.
Oh, aye. 'Twas foolish of me to respond. I'll be for begging your pardon, Sheriff.
Sheriff, this would be Duff McAllister. He's my cousin, and he's from Scotland.
I'm pleased to meet you. And what have we here?
I don't know the blackguard's name, but 'tis a thief he is. He stole a lady's purse.
Oh, I know his name all right. Hello, Stripling. Welcome to McAllister.
Well, my name ain't Stripling. I don't know what you're talking about.
Really? Well, now that's funny, because I just saw a Dodger with your likeness on it.
Sheriff Cody shuffled through the pile of wanted posters until he found the one he was looking for.
Well, let's see. Here it is. George Stripling. It seems that you robbed a stagecoach last month. And here you stole a woman's purse. That's quite a come down for you, isn't it? From robbing stagecoaches to stealing a woman's purse.
I didn't hurt nobody. I'm hungry. I was just trying to get enough money to get me something to eat.
Don't worry. We'll feed you well in here.
Sheriff Cody put his hand on the prisoner's arm and escorted him to the back of the room. There, he pushed Stripling into an empty cell, closed the door, and locked it behind him.
Well, if you have that blackguard well in hand, we'll be going.
And not so fast.
Sitting down at his desk, Cody pulled out a book and began writing. Tearing the page out, he blew on the ink to dry it, then handed it to Duff.
Here's a draft for $250 reward for bringing in George Stripling. You can take it to the bank and they'll cash it for you.
$250? Just for bringing the blackguard in?
I'm sorry it isn't more.
Oh, 'tis plenty enough.